Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 373, The Ties That Bind, Part 6. It also could be, I guess, subtitled Connecting the Dots, Part, 7, 8, how many, ever many programs you've done about connecting the dots. But this is being recorded on August 19th of 2002. We're talking about evidentiary tributaries linking a number of different terrorist incidents with the milieu of September 11th, and beyond that, to the milieu of Islamofascism and what I call the Underground Reich. We've already spoken about links between the Muslim Brotherhood and an African-American who went to work as an assassin for the Iranian fundamentalist regime. We've reviewed some information about the Muslim Brotherhood, and now we're talking about the Oklahoma City bombing and evidentiary tributaries between Oklahoma City and September 11th. We are in the middle of reading an article from the LA Weekly. This article is called The Terrorist Motel, subtitled The I-40 Connection Between Zacharias Moussaoui and Mohammed Atta. It's authored by Jim Crogan, C-R-O-G-A-N, and again, LA Weekly of the week of July 26th through August 1st of 2002. Now, this is a motel which is quite a ways outside of Norman, Oklahoma, and as the motel owner mentioned in speaking with, allegedly, Atta and a fellow hijacker, also in the company of Zacharias Moussaoui, there were many motels that were reasonably priced and much closer to Norman, Oklahoma, but according to the motel owner, Atta was very adamant about this particular motel. This would be one of the few hard connections between hijackers in this country and Zacharias Moussaoui, at least according to evidence that has been publicly released. And I would also note that in addition to the Atta Moussaoui Norman, Oklahoma, Oklahoma City connection here, there are two other tributaries, one between Moussaoui and a fellow named Mujahid Menepta, M-E-N-E-P-T-A. Menepta was an individual with a fairly long criminal history who was initially an advocate on behalf of Moussaoui. He basically said Moussaoui was a scapegoat. What is interesting is that Menepta was cited at this very same motel in the run-up to the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, in addition, as we're going to talk about in just a minute, Timothy McVeigh and company, allegedly in the company of Middle Eastern men, including Iraqis, stayed at this very same motel in the run-up to the Oklahoma City bombing. And again, we're going to go back to the description. We're going to overlap this with some of the text presented in Side 1, and we're going to be connecting Mr. Menepta and Mr. Moussaoui. And then we're going to make the transition to discussion of this same motel, again, well away from Norman, Oklahoma, where the hijackers were taking flight training. And as the motel owner pointed out, there were a number of reasonably priced motels that were closer to Norman, Oklahoma, but for one reason or another, they were insistent on this particular motel. And one of the possibilities that obviously suggests itself is that for one reason or another in connection with operational security, this particular motel may have been selected by allegedly the plotters in the Oklahoma City bombing and September 11th, and by extension, quite possibly the first, not this particular motel, but the same structure involved in the first World Trade Center attack. That appears to be fairly well established. The motel connection here in Oklahoma City is an intriguing one. Again, it would link Zacharias Moussaoui, Mohammed Atta, a location that was apparently frequented by an associate of Moussaoui in the run-up to Oklahoma City, and also McVeigh and alleged Middle Eastern men, apparently, at least according to some witnesses, allegedly Iraqis. Now, about the Menepta presence at this particular motel, a former desk clerk at the motel, a different clerk from the one who purportedly dealt with Atta and Moussaoui, told the Weekly that he remembered Menepta because in 1994 and 1995, prior to the Oklahoma City attack, Menepta frequently visited the motel office. There, he bought coffee and talked for hours to this clerk. The clerk and his wife, who both formerly worked at the motel, said they picked Menepta's picture out of a photo lineup prepared by a law enforcement officer who had interviewed the motel owner. This officer, who also spoke to the Weekly on condition of anonymity, said that after the motel owner told him about the Moussaoui sighting, he contacted a member of Oklahoma's Joint Terrorism Task Force, which includes the FBI. The FBI finally acted on the tip. The motel owner said that on December 19, 2001, he went to FBI offices in Oklahoma City for a formal interview, where he was debriefed by an FBI agent and by Oklahoma City Police Sergeant Jerry Flowers. Quote, We talked for several hours, and I told them everything I knew, unquote. The motel owner said he would have taken a polygraph exam, but was asked not to do so. The Weekly's law enforcement source corroborates the December 19th interview. The motel owner never heard from prosecutors in Moussaoui's case, but got one more call from the FBI several weeks later. Quote, "The agent told me that they had passed on a copy of my statement to Moussaoui's defense team, and I might be getting a call from them. But I was under no obligation to talk to them. However, I don't know if that was the truth. Since then, I have never heard from anyone connected to Moussaoui's case." Unquote. And then about the same motel allegedly being used by Timothy McVeigh in company with Middle Eastern men, allegedly Iraqis, we read, "One reason for the FBI's apparent lack of interest might be this motel's alleged connection to Timothy McVeigh and a group of Iraqis who worked in Oklahoma City. According to the motel owner and other witnesses and investigators interviewed by the Weekly, McVeigh and several of these Iraqis were motel guests in the months preceding the 1995 bombing. Witnesses also claim they saw several of the Iraqis moving barrels of material around on the bed of a truck. The motel owner said the material smelled of diesel fuel, and he had had to clean up a spill. Diesel fuel was a key component of the truck bomb that blew up the federal building. The motel owner said he and his staff reported this information to the FBI in 1995. Quote, "We did have an ATF agent come out and collect the originals of the room registrations for that period, but we never heard back from them. And I never could get the registrations returned," unquote. He added that his previous experience with the FBI made him reluctant to contact them about Moussaoui. Quote, "But I decided that it was my duty to tell them what had happened, and so I did," unquote. Former Oklahoma City TV reporter Jaina Davis also interviewed motel staff and former guests. In the process, she collected signed affidavits about their contacts with McVeigh and the Iraqis. She tried twice to give the Bureau this information, but the FBI refused to accept her materials. The Weekly first reported on her investigation in an article published in September of 2001. The Weekly's law enforcement source said he has reviewed Davis's material and considers it credible. Quote, "Last December, I personally took the documents to the Joint Terrorism Task Force," he said, again quoting, "I told them they should do their own investigation," unquote. The response was not encouraging. He said he was later informed that the Bureau brought in an analyst, quote, "but I was told it would probably go nowhere. They were afraid the whole Oklahoma City bombing can of worms would be opened up, and the FBI would have to explain why they didn't investigate this material before," unquote. The Weekly contacted numerous local and federal investigators and agencies, including the Oklahoma Task Force, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI, and the Justice Department. All declined to comment. Prosecutors on the Moussaoui case also declined official comment, but their reaction suggested they knew nothing of the motel encounter. After being told about the motel owner's interview and allegations, Assistant U.S. Attorney Robert Spencer responded with a one-word question about the sighting. When, unquote. Spencer then declined further comment. Another Moussaoui prosecutor, David Novak, also declined comment, but Novak wanted to know the name of the motel owner. Other substantial connections already tie the Sooner State to Moussaoui and, separately, several September 11th hijackers. Then the article goes on to summarize some of the circumstantial evidence. According to the Moussaoui indictment, on September 29th, 2000, Moussaoui made email contact with Airman Flight School in Norman. Then, on February 23rd, 2001, he flew from London to Chicago and then to Oklahoma City. What he did in the next few days is unknown, or at least not accounted for in the indictment, but on February 26th, Moussaoui opened a bank account in Norman, depositing $32,000. From February 26th to May 29th, he attended flight school in Norman. Then, he suddenly quit the school. Between July 29th and August 4th, Moussaoui made calls from public payphones in Norman to Germany. On August 1st and 3rd, Ramzi bin al-Shib wired Moussaoui a total of about $14,000 from two train stops in Germany to somewhere in Oklahoma. This wire transfer does imply a connection to terrorist plotters because Al-Shib, an alleged Al-Qaeda member, wired money to other hijackers as well. On August 3rd, Moussaoui purchased two knives in Oklahoma City. And on August 10th or 11th, an acquaintance drove Moussaoui from Oklahoma to Minnesota for enrollment in a new flight school. Authorities arrested Moussaoui in Minnesota on August 17th on an immigration violation. As has been widely reported, Moussaoui attracted attention because he said he was interested in flying a plane, but not learning how to take off or land. He was in federal custody when the 911 attacks occurred. As for the terrorists who took part in September 11th, Atta and Maron Al-Shehi visited the Airman Flight School in Norman in July of 2000, according to the Moussaoui indictment. The motel owner identifies Al-Shehi as the third person with Atta and Moussaoui when they allegedly inquired about a room. And on April 1, 2001, Nawaf Al-Hazmi, who helped hijack American Airlines Flight 77, which crashed into the Pentagon, was stopped for speeding in Oklahoma and given two tickets. The Oklahoma State Trooper found no outstanding warrants and turned Al-Hazmi loose. The media has since reported that the CIA had been tracking Al-Hazmi, but never told the Immigration Service or the FBI that he was a suspected terrorist during his 21-month U.S. stay. Authorities have never publicly accounted for Atta and Al-Shehi's whereabouts during the time of the alleged motel encounter. The Moussaoui indictment lays out a tantalizing possible association between Atta and Moussaoui, but never puts the two in the same place at the same time. The link could exist, however, along a dusty Oklahoma roadside off Interstate 40 at a small motel that is indistinguishable from hundreds of others except for its possible connection to terrorists. And again, not only the alleged Atta and Al-Hazmi connection, but the Atta Moussaoui Al-Hazmi connection, but also Mr. Manepta, and also allegedly Timothy McVeigh and Middle Eastern men, allegedly Iraqis, at this very same motel, a long way from Norman and more exorbitantly priced. But for one reason or another, according to the motel manager, Atta and company wanted this particular motel. So again, the evidentiary tributaries possibly connecting not only Oklahoma City to the first World Trade Center attack and to people from the Middle East as well as the Underground Reich, but also linking this to the September 11th conspiracy, well, those connections remain tantalizing. We're going to turn briefly to indicate that there's certainly more to the Atta story than we have been told. We're going to turn briefly to the recently published book, Forbidden Truth, subtitled U.S. Taliban Secret Oil Diplomacy and the Failed Hunt for Bin Laden. This book was co-authored by Jean-Charles Brizal and Guillaume Dasquet, published in softcover by Thunder's Mouth Nation Books, copyright 2002, and the ISBN number is 1-56025-414-9. And of Moussaoui, we read, "One single but striking example can illustrate this cultural difference in the approach to terrorism, the case of Zacharias Moussaoui, the French citizen arrested in the United States on August 17th of 2001, less than a month before the attacks for visa violations, who turned out to have been enrolled since February of 2001 in a flight school in Oklahoma, frequented by several of the suicide pilots of September 11th. The so-called 20th suicide bomber, whom the world discovered after the attacks on the World Trade Center, was not unknown to the Western intelligence services. It's even certain that officials of these services, among them the director of the CIA, had him in mind when these murderous attacks occurred. Indeed, the director of the CIA admitted having a thick file on the suspect 1 month before the attacks. Officially, however, neither the FBI nor the CIA had serious evidence that would allow Moussaoui to be interrogated before the attacks. As proof of this, a request for special surveillance as part of an anti-terrorist procedure had been refused to the FBI on the grounds that evidence for his involvement in terrorism was insufficient. Moussaoui was therefore held at an Immigration and Naturalization Service location in Minneapolis and wasn't transferred to FBI custody until after September 11th. The European intelligence services, notably the French, had already alerted the FBI to the Moussaoui case at least once in August of 2001, but the information sent, according to the Americans, was insufficient to put him under surveillance. This official version is acknowledged freely. The FBI did not hesitate in certain cases to contact investigative journalists about the matter in order to assure them, without material proof, that the information in their possession was, if not insufficient, at least inadmissible. We can reveal, however, that 1 month before the attacks of September 11th, French counterintelligence services relayed evidence, the insufficiency, unquote, of which remains to be proven. History will ultimately judge. Indeed, according to corresponding accounts taken from highly placed sources who have seen the relevant files, the French alerted the Americans about Moussaoui at this stage, quote, and not for the first time, unquote, and passed on unambiguous intelligence, leaving no doubt as to the suspect's terrorist links. It was shown to the Americans via the usual channels that Moussaoui had made his way to Afghanistan, that he was trained in 1998 in a camp controlled by Al-Qaeda, and that a strong possibility existed that he had been in contact with members of its network in Europe. Another 20-page indictment that includes an interrogation of his brother, which confirms this information, was also sent to the American services. So, nearly 1 month before the September 11th attacks, or at least since the arrest of Moussaoui on August 17th, the U.S. authorities had two fundamental pieces of evidence before them. They knew that the suspect apprehended on American soil was linked to the Al-Qaeda network, which, in itself, should have been cause enough for prompt, serious investigations, and they knew that he had taken part in flying lessons for civil aircraft. Now, the extent to which some of these ties that bind, indeed binding Moussaoui to an Islamo-fascist milieu that would run not only to the Underground Reich, but to the first World Trade Center attack and to the Oklahoma City bombing, as well as two people connected to the highest echelons of the German government, specifically the son of Helmut Kohl's chief of staff and the architect of German reunification, well, that is obviously what I call food for thought and grounds for further research. I want to note quickly and in passing that there was a lawsuit filed against key members of the Saudi royal family and against powerful Saudi interests by survivors of the victims of September 11th. I'm going to note just one detail about that lawsuit. Reading now from the L.A. Times of Friday, August 16th of 2002, an article by Aaron Zittner of the L.A. Times, Dateline Washington, headlined, 9/11 suit targets Saudi royalty. And of the advisors to this lawsuit, we read, Jean-Charles Brizard, to probe bin Laden's financial supports, lawyers for the plaintiffs say they hired their own investigators, including Jean-Charles Brizard, co-author of a controversial French bestseller that claims Saudi Arabia played as big a role in the spread of Islamic terrorism as did the Taliban, which offered bin Laden protection in Afghanistan. That book is Forbidden Truth, which we've alluded to in past programs, specifically in For the Record 337, and I've read it excerpts of it in a number of broadcasts, and that is the book co-authored by Jean-Charles Brizard. Now, in past broadcasts, specifically and among other programs, For the Record 88, we've talked about evidentiary tributaries connecting the Oklahoma City bombing to the AMIA bombing in Argentina. That was a Jewish cultural center and documentation center. And in broadcasts such as For the Record 109 and in For the Record 341, we talked about 109, 328, and For the Record 341, as well as number 330, we talked about links between Manzer al-Kassar, the Syrian-born terrorist who was involved by the Reagan-Bush administration in the Iran-Contra affair, and the AMIA bombing. Manzer al-Kassar is from the same town in Syria as former Argentine President Carlos Menem, and that same town, Yabrud, is also home to Menem's ex-wife and to a friend of al-Kassar's who was a key Syrian intelligence agent who married Menem's ex-wife's sister. And there's a complex web linking these various people from the Argentine government to Manzer al-Kassar, allegedly, and also to the AMIA bombing. As we looked at in For the Record 88, an FBI investigation into the AMIA bombing revealed that there were links between members of a cell of Argentinian law enforcement officers who were allegedly perpetrators of the bombing and to the White Aryan Resistance Organization of Tom Metzger, which has also been implicated in some allegations in the Oklahoma City investigation. And Timothy McVeigh, according to some accounts, was a member of White Aryan Resistance. So there's at least One evidentiary tributary, as we looked at in an article from La Nación of July 27th of 1997, again covered in For the Record 88, that links the AMIA bombing to the Oklahoma City bombing, at least in terms of evidentiary tributaries. And there are a number of interesting connections between the AMIA bombing and the Menem government. There have also been recent allegations of links between between the Iranian government and the AMIA bombing and a payoff to the Menem government. That story was featured in the New York Times of July 22nd of 2002. This is an article by Larry Roeter, R-O-H-T-E-R, Dateline Buenos Aires, headlined, Iran Blew Up Jewish Center in Argentina, Defector Says, and it reads in part as follows. The Iranian government organized and carried out the bombing of a Jewish community center here 8 years ago that killed 85 people and then paid Argentina's president at the time, Carlos Saul Menem, $10 million to cover it up, a witness in the case has said in sealed testimony. A 100-page transcript of a secret deposition provided to the New York Times by Argentine officials, frustrated that the case remains unsolved, supports long-held suspicions of Iranian involvement and adds to the questions surrounding the conduct of an inquiry that has been rife with irregularities from the start. Evidence has disappeared, leads have been ignored, and witnesses have been threatened and apparently bribed. According to the witness, a high-level defector from Iran's intelligence agency who gave his name as Abulghasem Mezbahi, Mr. Menem, who was president from 1989 to 1999, benefited for years from his ties to Iranian intelligence officials. They courted him as a valuable contact, Mr. Mezbahi said, for his combination of rising political power, Muslim ancestry, and connections to Argentina's small but influential Syrian-Lebanese community. Mr. Menem, who is once again a leading candidate for president, has already been tainted by political corruption scandals and spent 6 months under house arrest last year on charges that he had overseen an illegal arms smuggling operation while in office. But the bombing of the Argentine Jewish Mutual Aid Association on July 18, 1994, the worst terror attack ever carried out here, continues to haunt him and all levels of the Argentine government as a symbol of the absence of accountability that in recent months has brought this country to the brink of collapse. Skipping down of this Iranian defector, Mr. Mezbahi, Argentine and German officials describe him as a senior operative who has provided valuable information about Iranian terrorist operations in Europe and Asia through the mid-1990s. He defected to Germany in 1996, reportedly because he was upset at his agency's involvement in the killing of dissident intellectuals in Iran and abroad. Mr. Mezbahi said the planning for the attack in Buenos Aires began in 1992, led by Moshe Rabbani, cultural attaché at the Iranian embassy at the time, and supervised by Hamid Nagashan, a senior official of the Iranian intelligence agency. One cell focused on, quote, cooperating with members of the Argentine police, unquote, corrupting them or threatening them to collaborate with the attack, Mr. Mezbahi said, according to the transcript, again quoting, another devoted itself to obtaining the explosives, unquote, in Brazil, he said. Neil de Garay, who led the Argentine government's anti-terrorism unit in 2000 and 2001, and other Argentine officials said Mr. Mezbahi's account has been confirmed by another Iranian who had visited the Argentine embassy in Tehran twice. Immigration and foreign ministry records here confirm, the officials said, that several Iranians who were said to have been involved in the plot visited Argentina in the months preceding the bomb attack. Mr. Mezbahi said that after the attack, negotiations took place in Tehran with an emissary, a bearded man of about 50, sent by Mr. Menem. The result was that, quote, $10 million was deposited into a numbered account that Menem had indicated, unquote, Mr. Mezbahi said, paid from a $200 million Swiss account controlled by Hashemi Rafsanjani, who was Iran's president at the time, and by a son of Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. In return, Mr. Mezbahi said, Mr. Menem agreed, quote, to make declarations that there was no evidence against Iran that it was responsible, unquote. The Menem government initially blamed Iran, but the cumulative effect of later statements, arguing that there was insufficient proof, has been to sow uncertainty about responsibility for the attack itself. Earlier this year, the Swiss government acknowledged that it had been asked to look into information supplied by the Iranian informant. Eamon Mullen, the Argentine government's chief prosecutor in the case, said in an interview that investigators had confirmed that a deposit had been made into an account controlled by Mr. Menin at the bank named by Mr. Mizbahi and in the amount he had specified. Quote, "But it is not known who made the deposit or on what date," Mr. Mullen said, leaving open the possibility that payment could have been a payoff for other acts of corruption of which Mr. Menem has been accused or from some other source. After the bombing, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who succeeded Ayatollah Khomeini as Iran's supreme leader and still holds that post, publicly expressed his approval. Quote, "By gathering together groups of Jews with records of murder, theft, wickedness, and hooliganism from around the world," Ayatollah Khamenei said, "the Zionist regime has created an entity under the name of the Israeli nation that only understands the logic of terror and crimes," unquote. In his testimony, Mr. Mizbahi said Iran's contacts with Mr. Menem began in the mid-1980s when he was the governor of La Rioja province. Because Mr. Menem was of Arab descent, and they believed him to share their anti-Jewish sentiments, the Iranians covertly funneled money to Mr. Menem in hopes that he would be elected president and pursue policies favorable to Iran, Mr. Mizbahi said. Quote, "The companies that worked for Menem sold their products at a high price to Iran, which accepted those prices because it knew that those high prices were it knew what those high prices were paying for," Mr. Mizbahi said, according to the transcript, again quoting, "A lot of money went to the companies that supported the Menem campaign," unquote. After Mr. Menem became president in 1989, he consolidated his power by packing the Supreme Court with close political associates, including a former law partner, and by placing loyalists in key posts in the national security and intelligence apparatus. But he enraged the Muslim countries that hoped to take advantage of his rise, which included Libya as well as Syria, where he and his wife at the time both had relatives. Mr. Menem instead pursued what he called a carnal relationship, unquote, with the United States, apparently yielding to pressure from Washington not to sell weapons or advanced technology to Iran, Libya, or Syria, and became the first Argentine head of state to visit Israel. Argentine officials say the bombing at the Jewish Community Center was strikingly similar to an attack on the Israeli embassy here in 1992, in which 28 people died. In both cases, a car bomb was used, the targeted building was undergoing repairs, and police officers on a security detail inexplicably vanished just before the explosion. And again, there are connections between some of those Argentinian police and white Aryan resistance, according to an FBI infiltrator who was investigating the AMIA bombing. And that, in turn, presents evidentiary tributaries leading in the direction of Oklahoma City. Skipping down in this article, from the start, the Argentine government, especially in the person of Judge Galeano, has never shown a will to investigate and clear up this matter, said Alberto Zuppi, a lawyer and former justice minister who now represents Memoria Activa, an association of the families of bombing victims. "Everything has been done so as not to get to the bottom of this matter," Mr. Zuppi said, "and the result is that much time and evidence has been lost," unquote. And again, note that Manzar El-Kassar's name has cropped up in connection with the AMIA bombing in a number of different contexts. I would note that both President Menem and the Bush administration have denied the account of that was presented here, which is interesting in light of the first George Bush's sponsorship of Manzar El-Kassar for some of the Iran-Contra shenanigans. I would also note that now there has been an indication of Swiss bank accounts that have turned up belonging to Carlos Menem. Financial Times, weekend edition, August 17th and August 18th of 2002. Article by Thomas Caton and Francis Williams, "Doubt over Menem's election bid as bank account scandal flares." And skipping down of these Swiss bank accounts, the second account, reported to have been opened while Mr. Menem was president, was at a Zurich institution absorbed by Gothard Bank. And Gothard Bank, or Banco del Gotardo, is part of the Nada Management Altaqua complex, and that in turn has very strong connections to international money laundering and to terrorism. There will be a detailed annotated description of this program in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com, and there are links in the Spitfire website to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU that have the For the Record programs on real audio. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program 373, The Ties That Bind, Part 6, being recorded on August 19th of 2002. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.